cliffcentral.com.
Sure, bit of a delayed reaction there. So it took me a second to... Oh, jeez. Yeah, I know. Bit of a slow start to the morning, huh? Thursday, the 19th of December. December. How's your December going? I hope you're well into the swing of things. I made myself the most perfect cup of coffee this morning. You know, we haven't given these guys a plug in a long time, but people drink their coffee like thirsty animals drink water at the watering hole. I mean, I've got to give credit to Canton Pillay because he's coming in late for the burning platform. But Canton came in here one morning. He said, look, I don't expect a lot in my life, but I'm not going to start the day with a bad coffee.
That's not unreasonable.
And these guys, they're called L'Or, L'OR, which in French means gold.
They make fancy.
They make such good coffee, man. You get different kinds of pods. And so my whole family are now on this stuff, and they all have these coffee machines at home. I've got one at home. I told you I bought one eventually. Mm-hmm. And you know, it makes the difference. If you are waking up in the morning and you have a shitty cup of coffee, you're denigrating yourself to that backwater of humanity that just, they'll take whatever cheap shit gets thrown at them, and life is just this arduous cycle of like only being able to afford this so that you can't do that. And so all you do is you end up finding excuses in your head for doing worse and not better.
Do you know who was a funny fan of the coffee brand?
Who?
Patrizio Buane.
Oh, you see.
And it makes sense.
Yeah, now you see, he's Italian.
It makes sense.
I tell you, I learned to do espresso in Italian. In Italian and in Italy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Said proper.
You do as the Italians do in Italy.
Mm. What? Italy.
Yeah, now,
you can't say it either.
I can't take it.
You were going to say something?
I was going to say, I'm still absolutely disgusted that in 2019, I don't want to mention any brands. Oh, no. Mortified.
Heavy language coming on.
Absolutely horrified that people still, when they invite you to their house in 2019, think that offering you, I'm not going to say any brands, but that stuff where you have to use a teaspoon to pour the coffee, like you call it instant coffee. Don't call it coffee.
What would you call it?
Let me tell you something.
Sweat. I'd rather drink it. Rather offer me your toilet water.
We have a few people in this building who will remain nameless who prefer the instant coffee, which is why we still have it there. Because trust me,
I think I am losing my ranking on the show as the most highfalutin and snobbish person here.
You are. You're in
Enter
danger.
Mbulelo from stage left.
But while we're talking about good coffee and Italians and all that stuff, there's something that a friend of mine, she's half Italian, her dad's Italian, and she posted something on her Instagram the other day which got me thinking. And it made me think of Zucchero, right? And it's funny, like Zucchero and... Hello, Pumelele. Zucchero and who's the other guy who... All restaurants are mandated to play Zucchero music. Have you noticed that?
They're mandated very strong.
It's like part of your package when you start a restaurant. You have to get a Zucchero album for free with it.
It's like a U2 on the iTunes for a while.
Yeah, I think that's what they give you. They give you a Zucchero album.
Have you ever tried to Google Zucchero's full name?
Yeah, it's quite something, huh?
His stage name simply being Zucchero means sugar.
Right. But what is his full name? Go on.
Adelmo Fornaciari.
Wow.
Cavalieri di Gran Croce.
Jesus. Is that still, we're still on the name, or have you got into a sentence?
I don't know.
And then there's speaking about him.
Then there's a title, OMRI. I don't know what that means.
Wow. Sure. I'll make it through tomorrow. Yeah, you just hear this music in every... I don't know if it's still a thing, but it was. I remember as a kid, like every restaurant you'd go into. I'm not making this up, right, Pumi?
Dude, just give me a moment. Okay, just give me a moment.
You only lasted a order as a waiter. I lasted, I think, like 11 or 12 days working as a waiter. Wow. And one of the things that also led me to quit was having the Bee Gees on replay at the restaurants I worked at. I couldn't stomach staying alive anymore. No, it was just, I think they had the Bee Gees Greatest Hits album that was always playing. So by that time, I thought,
I love the Bee Gees. Oh. Can't get me upset on that front.
Not when you're working like 6, 7, 8 hours a day and you have to listen to the whole album.
I'll never get
on
sick
loop
of
all the time.
I just want to say I'm triggered there a little bit. Yeah.
You're triggered. It's it's
Waitron. Waiter was displaying a little bit of toxic masculinity there, but I don't want to be that guy.
Wait, but what was I?
Your Waitron, it's neutral.
I hate that term.
Gender neutral.
Yeah, I hate the term Waitron. Makes you sound like a machine.
You said waiter.
I was a waiter.
And I found that offensive in my personal space.
No, but he can choose his title. See, you don't have a say.
I'm triggered, you're triggered now.
It's like if he wants to be a transgender woman. I saw this. So they've got a homelessness problem in Los Angeles, right? Everybody knows about that.
Ever since Eleanor came in this week, I like the term rough sleeper.
Yeah, rough sleepers.
They have a rough sleeper problem.
Huh? They've also got a rough sleeper problem in Seattle. Which is in you know, Washington State, upper, what is it? It's on the far northwest coast. And Seattle is a very beautiful city. I mean, it rains a lot there, but they've got a lot of homeless people. In fact, any city that the Democrats run is full of homeless people, I'll tell you something. And they've just brought up... No, the reason I bring this up is because this week the Supreme Court made a ruling about homelessness and that you cannot issue a ticket to homeless people on the street. So in other words, you can't have them locked up for making some kind of dwelling on the street. And you know that there's a huge correlation between severe mental illness and homelessness, right? And there's also a huge correlation between drug addiction and homelessness. They all go together. And it turns out that if a city builds houses for homeless people or shelters or whatever it might be, that's like a magnet for them. So it makes the problem worse, not better. And what they've done now is they've said it's legal to live on the street, whereas before it was illegal. So with people with severe mental illness, like paranoid schizophrenia or any other real problem that happened to also be homeless, you have to use the carrot and the stick. A lot of people believe you only use the carrot, so you build them a house and then everything will get better. But you actually have to also make them realize that staying on the street has a cost. The point is that Seattle, there's a guy who's an activist for homelessness. And he hired someone called Beyonce. Oh, God.
Oh, okay. You have my attention already.
Oh, God. I've got to look her up because it's just something else. Like, she's a transgender performer.
Oh.
I must look this up. Beyonce.
Was it like a what's the term? Like one of those tribute artists?
Yeah, she's a performing artist.
Oh, so. I see the story already. Oh,
see the story?
Okay.
Do you want to pick it up here?
Beyonce Black St. James.
That's right.
She's a trans, well, I don't know what pronoun, a transgender dancer who performed in Seattle. She performed at a homeless agency's conference.
Right.
And that video of her performance has now gone viral.
Now, this performance is basically a strip show.
And yeah, she stripped, she gave lap dances.
Yeah, now, how this helps the homeless, I do not know. But this guy who hired her is a homelessness activist who obviously, you know, is fighting hard for the homeless people to not, for them to not be thrown out into the ugly world of prison, out of the ugly world of homelessness.
Okay.
And his way of dealing with this is to hire Beyonce Black St. James.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they refer to as Miss St. James and all of the formal
and this guy, by the way, was earning something like $150,000 a year. So he's now had to step down because there's a big controversy. Like, why are you spending money on a transgender stripper for your conference when you've got homeless people to deal with? And it's always interesting to me, like, the people who make the biggest noise about activism, sometimes behind the scenes, the people who do the very least. They want everyone else to do it. It's kind of like Greta Thunberg and the rest of it, you know.
Rough sleepers.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle.
Okay.
The rough sleeper epidemic is growing here in South Africa.
Big time. Mm. You can see it.
We're in places where I have never seen homeless people, you now see plenty. Like
where?
Melville.
Ooh.
Like Rosebank.
Mm-hmm.
Like Linden.
Right.
Like it's become quite a hectic thing. But also, you know, like growing up here in Joburg, I haven't really ever been confronted with lots and lots and lots of homeless people. Yeah. When you leave South Africa,
mm-hmm.
well, Cape Town's got lots of bergies.
They do.
Right?
They've got a lot.
And they've always had lots of bergies.
And you see them sort of sleeping in those doorways to big office buildings and that kind of thing, yeah.
And then I went to Mumbai.
Oh, yeah?
OMG.
Tell me.
Mumbai has got a rough sleeper problem. But they are like whole families.
Jesus.
Sure.
Sleeping on the side of the road. Like, it is hectic.
Mm. But again, like India, everything seems to be magnified. Mm. Like, if you talk about poverty in this country, until you've seen poverty in India, you don't know what poverty is in South Africa, right? I mean, I hate comparing horrible things. It's like someone saying, you know, I cut my arm, and someone else going, well, I cut off my whole leg. It's not, no one wants this. These are not problems that people should be arranging in hierarchies. But that sounds about right, because India does everything exponentially.
It was a shock to the system. It really was. And now when I see it, now I'm much more aware of people that are sleeping in the streets. Mm. And that's why I'm saying I see a whole lot more people now, which, you know, so mental illness, definitely one of the things that has grown exponentially in our country. And secondly, the drug problem.
Yeah.
There are areas in Durban, like the under the bridge, you know this, right? Near the, there's this bridge kind of, and they are just,
that's where CS Dealer operates from. Oh, which yes.
That's where I'm going this weekend.
You just see, and there's so many now. In Pretoria, when you drive through Pretoria, they are just rough sleepers.
You know, but yeah, particularly
it's a hectic thing.
It's a very hectic thing.
With some volunteer work that I've done recently, and you know, when I help out, I try to bring my business brain to things. So I was telling this organization that I work with, oh my goodness, you know, if we get press around what you do, that will, you know, get people talking, that will get more people knowing about you, then they can donate.
Right.
So organize some press for them. And they couldn't, and when we had this team of journalists around, a lot of the guys who were coming to get some like dinner at the soup kitchen, blah, 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 did not want to be photographed because some of their family didn't even know they were homeless. So I think homelessness, sadly, in this country is also becoming an easier option than having to stay at home. It might sound like a generalizing here, but it's a bit of an example, as compared to staying at home in the Eastern Cape where there are eight of us and we all have to suffer.
Yeah.
Rather let me get out of that circle and have to fend for myself. All I have to do is just wake up and figure out where to get two meals in a day. And yeah, I can sleep on the street. At least that's easier than being at home and suffering together. So it's horrible that, you know, this is an easier solution for some people in this country. I think that's also what is lending to an increase.
And of course, if you are mentally ill and you do have something like paranoid schizophrenia or something like that, because a lot of these homeless people do, it's a huge proportion. We're talking like 8 out of 10 of them, right? According to studies that they just did in LA. They're not getting any treatment on the streets. In fact, what happens is because you're in those rough conditions and you're dealing with...
It deteriorates. It makes you worse.
So, you know, you get robbed, for example, because you're homeless.
Mm.
People come up and take what little you have by force. You deal with very, very dodgy people. The underworld is constantly swirling around you. It's very ugly.
Look, and
it's very ugly.
Going to the States for the first time this year, I had heard about what happens in the subways and some homeless people who are around in the subways.
And yeah, and you only saw Washington and New York. Mm. The West Coast, much worse, because their policies are so much worse.
And look, it's, some people make it a little comical, but I didn't know how bad it can be up until I experienced it myself.
What? What? You had a confrontation, so, Seattle?
I had like two.
On the subway train.
On the subway, but also the one... No, I don't think I told you this.
Because New York famously has, you know, there's a lot of crazy people on the subway. And it's one of the reasons that some people don't like to use the subway. There's somebody on the train and someone will start a fight. Someone will start shouting at people.
There were two
separate incidents.
They're happening all the time.
Yeah.
But to one person, yeah. One seer.
In 1 week.
The one I didn't tell you about, but I spoke about on, I think, the Monday when I came back, was when I had gone to watch The Daily Show, and The Daily Show wrapped up at like midnight because it was a live special then. So I was walking back from the studio to my hotel room, and from a dark alley somewhere, and I'm just walking alone and I don't really feel, I'm not intimidated at all. Then from a dark alley, I just hear a voice like, hey, hey, hey girl, hey, hey girl.
Then, oh, Jesus.
The shadow emerges and I realize it's a homeless guy and he goes, ooh, girl, you shaking that thing. Ooh, you shaking it, girl. Come here. Come here, girl. Come here, girl. I'm like, oh, girl, no.
Put on some speed.
And really the fact that he was referring to me as a girl, you shaking that thing. But in the moment...
So were you shaking that thing?
Look, in the moment where I look back and glance back at him, take him out of that environment, give him a scrub and a shave, you know, could have entertained him. But oh, wow. Given that, no. And then the second incident was...
Well, yeah. Don't just go over it like that.
See ya.
No, I'm just saying, you have to isolate the person from the context. And then the second incident was the morning that I had to leave, but I really wanted to squeeze every last drop out of the trip. So I think my flight was at like 10 or 11 a.m., but I woke up specifically at 2 a.m. because I hadn't gone to Staten Island. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a 24-hour ferry. So I said, you know, I'm definitely going to go. So I woke up at 2 and I, you know... I was walking on the streets there, and I took the subway at 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's a dodgy time to be on there, man.
And in the carriages, at least there were, I could tell that there were a lot of people who had just wrapped up their night shifts because a lot of people were sleeping. That's what I had initially thought.
Yeah.
Because everyone was sleeping there. And then stop by stop, the people who were working the night shift would leave and they'd get off up until like I was stuck with like two random people in the carriage. And
then Jesus.
I looked to my left and I just locked eyes with one guy. Oh, and I'm no. Like, okay. You know, all it takes is two extra seconds of a person not blinking for you to get worried.
Never look one of those homeless people in the eyes. I know it sounds like you're not treating them like a human being, but they see it as a gap to get help, to engage with you, to maybe just for that moment to have an interaction with somebody. Yeah.
I got off at the next stop. I don't even remember the name of that stop, but all I remember
got
was
off in somewhere worse.
It was a little dodgy because I ran out of the station and I got out and was the Barclays Center.
Can you imagine being...
It was. So the Barclays Center, I think, is in Brooklyn in comparison to...
3 in the morning.
Three in the morning with Sia in New York.
Wow, Sia.
But never mind, I'll take a cab from here. No more subway for me.
All right.
I'll just Uber.
I've got to refer to something that we brought up yesterday, and it's something that seems to be getting a lot of attention. These cameras that are everywhere. Sia sent a picture this morning.
Dude, in my hood.
Uh-huh.
How many? Have you seen a couple pop up around you?
In my hood.
There's
Linden, Greenside, whatever. So Linden, Greenside, that area. And that's the only place I travel.
According to, if you go to vumacam.co.za, you can learn about these cameras that are going up everywhere. And this is from Brendan. Brendan says, I wonder how many people are wrongfully arrested in China. I mean, given a supercomputer, we'll have a hard time figuring out who's who over there. You know, they've got facial recognition and, yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's got to be difficult, right?
No. So why?
They don't all look the same.
No, man. That's not what I meant.
Mbulelo.
Just the sheer volume of people.
It's a supercomputer.
Sure.
Although I do agree, AI is not there yet.
No, I mean,
in a lot of departments, it's still really.
I get tagged on my own phone as some other people sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my own phone.
Yeah.
Kaya Lang posted a video of his younger brother opening his phone with his facial recognition.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So.
Shit.
There have been a few incidents with the biometrics traveling and.
Well, yeah. One of South Africa's top kind of AI professors is the dean at UJ. Professor Marwala. Mm-hmm. And he has a very fascinating story because, you know, in Singapore, at the border, they now have facial recognition technology. So because of when you get your visa and all of that kind of stuff, it's all tagged. There are no visa officials. There are no... So when you arrive at the gate, you tag your ID and you walk up to a booth, facial recognition opens up and lets you through because, like... technology, right? And he was on a trip with a couple of other people, and the technology didn't work on him. Because the thing about facial recognition and facial mapping is it needs volumes of data.
Sure.
So it needs lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of data, and there's not enough volumes of data around mapping black features.
Right, especially in Singapore. Yeah.
So it couldn't recognize
him. It didn't get him.
It didn't recognize him. So everybody else took like 5 minutes to get through the gates. He eventually had to get like an official to come through. And this is a guy whose work is in AI. He was quite
But what scares me a little bit is Kaid Langer's little brother getting in on his phone. Joel.
Yeah. I still don't have the answer of identical twins. Whether they can...
Even though they are identical twins, they are not identical. They don't have the same markers.
Yeah. Same, but different.
To you and I, with the naked eye, may look very similar. But people who have twins in their families, people who are friends with twins, people who have enough twins, you know how to tell them apart.
I'm still shitty at that because I know some twins and I go...
Oh, no.
Which one is it?
Oh, no.
But I'll never forget it. A guy once on the show a couple of years ago said, "You look together. Are you twice?"
Yes.
You look
together.
That's the way he described twins. You look you look to two people. You look together.
Yeah.
Are you twice?
Yeah. Mm.
Made perfect sense.
That shit, actually.
Yeah.
That's iconic. Yeah, but going back to the China example and what we referenced yesterday. So if you... are wrongly accused of something, you know, and they have the whole demerit system and you're fined and you already have something, some amounts deducted from your account. Imagine if you're wrongfully charged with something and then here you already have money taken out of your account.
Or what if someone,
never thought of
someone
that.
With bad intentions tags your facial mapping, your thing with some kind of criminal thing that you know, you're not guilty of. There's a computer glitch or something. It confuses you for someone else. The records get swapped. See. These things, suddenly you're in Black Mirror.
That's a part of a movie.
Yeah, like if I was ever caught drinking instant coffee, for instance, that would horrify me.
If I got tagged snob. As
somebody who drank instant coffee.
Have you ever met two people that are more like, have bigger superiority complexes than these two? I thought Sia was the worst, but... Bulelo might be even worse.
Gareth, it's 2019. I'm not an animal. I'm not drinking instant coffee.
Oh, sure. Jesus. All right. So here's someone who agrees with me about Zucchero and Eros Ramazzotti and how they are they're mandatory at restaurants across the country. Adam, he also says, I joke every time my wife and I go to an Italian restaurant and they're not playing Eros Ramazzotti or Zucchero. In Dubai, they're launching a camera system in the airport that will recognize your biometrics and you can walk off the plane and go straight to bag collection and leave the airport. Yeah. Apparently, they're going live in Terminal 3 next year.
Oh, wow.
See? Look at it happening.
One of our colleagues told me yesterday, I didn't know it existed because it didn't exist when I went to Israel, but he said in Israel it already exists and I'm not sure if that's only for Israeli citizens, but he said he didn't need to get a stamp in his book. leaving Israel, one of our colleagues. So that was quite interesting to hear. I didn't know.
Sure.
So it's already here.
And then here's a story that we'll get to in the five things, but the days of banks suing in the High Court are over. We will look at that in just a little while. Yeah.
The what?
Hmm? The days of banks suing you in the High Court for money are over. There's some kind of precedent that's been set there. All right, it's 6:30, so we may as well get into some stories. Where shall we begin? Let's begin with a story from EWN this morning. The Hawks have taken over the Eskom sabotage case. Now, you will remember that Cyril said a week ago, he got back very flustered, always shocked, from Egypt, where he had to interrupt his trip. He realized that the nation was very unhappy, came back, had an emergency.
Never mind the fact that he left in the midst of that crisis.
Correct.
When he left, we were already
Right. Say it again, Pumi.
Tell him.
So he comes back and he's all horrified that this is happening, calls an emergency press conference. Anyway, Mr. Jan Oberholzer, as they call him in press conferences, over here, Mr. Jan. And Mr. Jan goes, because I mean, who wants to pronounce Oberholzer? It's much too difficult. And and who knew he was even that until someone...
Who knew?
We spoke to Ted Blom the other day. He told me his name, because they honestly didn't put his name anywhere. So Mr. Jan, in the meantime, goes live this week during an interview. And he says, no, there's no sabotage. It's just bad maintenance. There are huge strains in the system. Overall, the thing's been managed into the ground, is what he was saying, which is what we all know happened. Which kind of makes Cyril look stupid. And when I heard him say that, I thought, uh-oh, you're going to be in trouble. Because, you know, you don't countermand the president when he says there's sabotage. Because the president's also scrambling for an excuse to make it look like it isn't his government that's useless.
Plus, you know what's awkward is he owns most of like the McDonald's still. Does he still own?
No, he's out of that.
Oh, is he out of the game? Because you'd hate to have him come out as a liar and not be able to go to McDonald's. just my thoughts.
Oh, anyway, so this is what's happening. The case of sabotage at the station in Mpumalanga called Tituba has been referred to the Hawks. See, they're ramping it up, Pumi. President Cyril Ramaphosa last week said he was informed by Eskom that sabotage had led to the loss of 2,000 megawatts. The power utility implemented an unprecedented stage 6 load shedding. Hawks spokesperson Hangwani Mulawudzi said, it's too early for us to give details on what's happening, but we'll get information, and when we have more details, we will come back.
I like his name.
It's bullshit, right?
Who? Hangwani?
Yes. Hangwani Mulawudzi.
Yeah, it's a good name.
Oh, we a joke to these people, man.
Oh, sorry. Okay, clearly. Back to the point. Yes, back clearly. To the point.
the details haven't come out.
This one is... I think we should move along to the next story.
You know what I'm looking at here.
This, I see this, and I think Gareth will be much more entertained by this one.
The lawyer for the teacher involved in a sex scandal at Bishop's has written to the school to ask what action would be taken against the boys involved. Fiona Viotti, the teacher, resigned from the elite private school after it emerged she had sexual contact with some of the pupils at the school. An internal investigation revealed at least 5 boys were involved. Viotti's lawyer, William Booth, said he was not given the final report from the school's investigation, despite requesting it. Booth wrote to the school to find out whether it would take action against the boys involved. The whole investigation that came out should also have looked at the responsibility that pupils had in the whole matter. And I think that's fair. They are the kids, they are the victims. But we've got to look at this because...
Both sides?
Well, you've got to get an idea of how these things happen. Even if it's not to assign blame, but it's to find out how these things happen to prevent it from happening again. You can't just say, here is the person who is the aggressor, here is the victim. Victim is blameless, aggressor is totally to blame.
Except for the fact that the way that it is phrased... is he is asking what action will be taken against the boys. And that's
ridiculous.
A problem. Because no matter what it is that happened over there, the balance of power says the adult.
Yeah.
Is responsible and should be the person who is, at the end of the day, the person with whom the buck should stop. So, hey, Maralabantu.
In the wake of the scandal,
what are you contemplating?
I hear you.
You just disagree.
Not that I disagree, and it will not. There's no way to eloquently explain this or to get more people to side with it. But I still stand by the fact that, yo, I know what the law says, and the adults should always do better and still be held accountable. But I come from a very similar school culture where, you know, maybe it's the hormones talking, maybe it really is a fascination or attraction you have to a teacher or someone older. But I have instances, and I know of people who've been in situations where they were flirting with teachers, and now I look back, and technically it is wrong on paper, but one of my friends was texting and flirting with a teacher in matric. So yes, he was 18 and the teacher was 24, but on paper that's wrong, right?
So,
but I still think he knew, as the student, he knew exactly what he was doing.
The problem with that perspective is that if these were girls
mm-hmm.
with a male teacher,
mm-hmm.
the gaze would be very different. We would all be horrified and disgusted.
Mm.
And that's wrong. They are still children.
Okay. Mm.
They are still children, whether they are girls or boys. They are still children, and the teacher took advantage of them.
Yeah, and you influence.
Whether they are boys or girls,
yeah.
This is wrong.
Mm. Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with Pumi on this, but there is an interesting comment here that's being made by Wendell, who says the only action needed against those boys is medical attention for wrist damage from all the high fives.
I knew it was going in that direction.
You are right. This is Pumi. Okay, I hear you. It is the boy thing. Oh, you scored. You nailed it. Oh, you got her. If it was girls.
Yeah. All right, well, here's that story that we were alerted to. A recent judgment by the full bench of the Grahamstown High Court makes it unlawful for banks to bring National Credit Act matters before the High Court instead of the much cheaper Magistrates Court. You can see why, because banks have deep pockets and they can hire lawyers and they can take you to the High Court. And you might not have enough money, especially if you're being, approached on a matter that has to do with the National Credit Act. You're probably already in financial difficulty. They take you to the High Court, which you can't afford. You need to get an advocate. It sets you back a couple of R100,000 sometimes. People don't have that kind of money. So now you have to go to the magistrates' courts. It's good.
Yeah, progress.
That sounds good. Sounds like a good ruling.
Mm.
The recent judgment means lenders no longer have the luxury of suing in high courts. Through the judgment, they're confined to credit agreements falling under the National Credit Act, and a minority ruling by Judge Mbulelo Joloana called for all civil actions and applications to be instituted in the magistrates' court to give effect to the constitutional right of access to justice. It's an interesting story. R. Kelly's in the news. Do you want to hear about this while we're talking about
people? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Oh, R. Kelly.
R. Kelly on Wednesday pleaded not guilty to bribing an official in order to get fake ID for singer Aaliyah, then 15, the day before he married her. The latest charge in a criminal case accusing him of running a years-long scheme to recruit underage girls for sex. See, we're horrified automatically, Pumi.
Mm.
Kelly, who's known for songs like I Believe I Can Fly, Bump and Grind, entered his plea.
I feel like this needs to be rewritten. Kelly, I'll write the sentence.
Go on.
Robert Kelly, known for albums titled Black Panties and songs like Chocolate Factory. Carry on. I Believe I Can Fly takes him to church. No, he gave us Black Panties. Gave us Chocolate Factory.
Let's just remember this guy's 52.
AJ, nothing but a number.
Yeah, wow. He gave us that. Yeah,
AJ, nothing but a number. Ain't that the most frightening line ever written by a pedophile?
Bring that in there.
Prosecutor said on 30 August 1994, Kelly caused another person to offer a bribe to a government official so that he could create a fake ID for a person identified in the pseudonym Jane Doe number one. The person is Aaliyah, according to a source familiar with the matter. Mm. Kelly, then 27, married Aaliyah, who was 15. The marriage was annulled in 1995. She, of course, died in a plane crash in the Bahamas in 2001. So Douglas Anton, who's a lawyer for R. Kelly, said after Wednesday's hearing, the bribery allegation was ridiculous. Mm. Anton added Kelly was doing well in jail and was continuing to compose music. It's such uplifting stuff, he said. He's just a genius. Kelly is scheduled to go to trial in May 2020. Mm. Such a genius.
On that note, I love the court of public opinion. You know, like, things can change in 2.3 seconds. So people are sort of standing up for R. Kelly. And I mean, sort of.
Oh, really?
Standing up for R. Kelly versus Oprah. Dum, dum, dum.
Who are these people?
Yeah, Oprah is producing a documentary highlighting famous sexual predators. And it's mostly centered around Russell Simmons and allegations around Russell Simmons. But right. Also, Oprah has done that interview with the two guys who rose up with allegations against Michael Jackson. And has also, and she's also spoken out against Bill Cosby and also spoken out and supported some people who speak out against R. Kelly. So now people are saying, Oprah. It's been Michael Jackson, R. Kelly, Russell Simmons, Bill Cosby. It's all of the black sexual predators or alleged sexual predators. What about Harvey Weinstein and Epstein and whatnot? So people are saying, actually, give R. Kelly a chance to sit down and chill. You go after Harvey Weinstein. So people aren't happy with Oprah right now.
Well, I don't. I actually, the last thing I care about is the race of a sex predator.
It's, you're nasty. You're nasty.
I mean, you could also say, why is it all men? Because there are, apparently, I've never met one, but people like Fiona Viotti, who are, definition, sex predators, right?
Oh, they're very real.
Yeah.
They
are, but again, there's, you know, I don't care if they're all black, all white, half men, half women. There's something wrong with people who, A, prey on children, and B, prey on people who are vulnerable, but also who take sex by force.
Yeah.
And that's wrong no matter who you are, where you come from. So I can't understand how anyone could be upset that Oprah is making this documentary. It sounds to me like a documentary that needs making.
No, you go.
So I'd say the upside of this, obviously, this is an absolutely horrendous situation. But the thing is, this has always been happening, which is the horrifying thing. What's awesome is that now we are getting to a stage where no more. Chief, if one mistake, you're gone. I really do celebrate that mostly women, because it's a, you know, don't have to be quiet anymore. Because it's been happening all the time. We mustn't think, it wasn't happening.
If there's anything good about this Me Too thing, which has got a little out of control and has become something which people who don't really have a legitimate gripe have rallied around. If there's a good thing about it, it is that women are finally empowered to come out and say these things that men are going to be hopefully on their best behavior, and that would be a very good and welcome outcome.
So, speaking of sexual predators, there's this organization in the States called Bark, you know, like the sound a dog makes.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple of days ago on Medium.com, they had an article about. So what this organization does is it's software, it's AI software that you can have put on your child's phone, smartphone, to be able to alert you as the parent if your child is having conversations, inappropriate conversations online, on the social media networks. But what this organization also does, they also do stuff around school shootings, preventing school shootings and all of that kind of stuff, self-harm.
Sounds good.
It's a great organization. When you read up about it, it's really a great organization. But one of the things that they do is they work with law enforcement agencies in the States to apprehend sexual predators on social media who are targeting children.
Oh.
And they just released the stats for 2018. Mm-hmm. And their stats for 2017 was they handed over 99 predators, and they track them. So they create profiles, and then they track the kind of people that are talking and what they're doing, so that they can build a case around these people to hand over, so that it's a prosecutable case when they hand it over to the law enforcement agencies. In 2017, they handed over 99 individuals.
Right. I know there's a horrible number coming.
In 2018, they handed over 399 profiles.
And it's going to go exponentially up.
And in the article that I was reading on Medium, they actually take the journalists through one of their evenings. So they have their control room where they put up the profiles and they have it up on the screens and whatever. Right. And they put up a profile of the youngest profile they've ever put up, an 11-year-old. And within 12 hours, that 11-year-old had 56. 12 hours, 56. Older men.
Oh, Jesus.
Have conversations with this
so
child.
Gross.
God, send so gross. Dick pics. Try and video call.
Jeez.
Like.
God, it makes me so ill. 11-year-old.
Be vigilant.
Well, there's an interesting story that Emma Sadler shared on her social media. Apparently, listen to this. A mom and journalist, Anastasia Basil, decided to download TikTok on her phone when her 10-year-old daughter asked for it. And her verdict, one word sums up my experience. No way is my kid getting this app. TikTok, the world's most popular app at the moment, is a social network that allows users to lip sync to songs, create short videos, stream themselves live, as well as view the videos and live streams of others and comment and chat. Most disturbing of all, Basil found, was watching children as young as 8 sexually objectify themselves. The kids who get it right, the tweeny Kardashians, gain followers, she notes. Those who aren't sexy enough are bullied and abused in the comments section. This is happening with kids as young as 8. Good Lord. Even worse, their content may be added to one of the TikTok cringe compilation videos on YouTube, some of which have north of 5 million views.
Jeez.
The harm is not limited to the children whose images are exploited, but extends to every child who watches these cruel, crude videos, whether on YouTube or on TikTok. Among other discoveries, Basil found out about TikTok's code language that is used to bypass the platform's filters. Some kids use hashtags in their videos with words like thot, which stands for that hoe over there, right? Or F-girl, hottie, S-X-Y, wootie, which is W-H-O-O-T-Y, or sin, she explains. But good luck keeping up, because the code changes week to week. Mm. TikTok's staple fare is kids lip-syncing to popular songs, and that sounds harmless. But consider that this inevitably means children mouthing words about rough sex. Some kids hashtag their videos with all of these words so that other kids can find them. Anyway, she went on this journey and she tried the app out, and she said it is inappropriate for primary school age children. It's an emphatic no from this mom, who's also an investigative journalist.
Dude.
Interesting subject there, Gareth, because what that places us as a society, it puts us in a place, right, is do we need to teach people that for doing things, especially when you do them in public, there are consequences. Now, parents will say, oh, I want my kids to do these things. But once you're out on the public platform, I mean, everybody's here has been in the public platform and felt the furor. Just because you're a child, once you're out on the public platform, it doesn't mean that only children are seeing it. So you need to teach kids probably earlier, because technology is really new, right, is there are consequences when you do things.
Yeah.
And most of the consequences when you go public are awful. Mm-hmm. So there's something to think about there as parents.
I want to go to Dr. Jonathan Witt, who's on the line. He told us that the weekend of December the 16th, which is the weekend we just had a couple of days later, is always the most dangerous weekend in emergency rooms because people do stupid stuff. They get super drunk. And he's on the line now. Dr. Witt, thanks for making some time for us. I know you're on call this morning. You've been talking to some of your colleagues. You've gathered some stories about what happened over the last weekend. Real life stories in South African emergency rooms. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I told Sia, unfortunately, I can't speak to too many specifics because, you know, it's close to close to the instances of all these events, and I don't want any patients to be identifiable. But sure. the usual stuff you would expect. Sounds like it was a bit quieter this year. I'm sure we have Eskom and a very horrible economy to thank for that. So at least there's an upside to being completely economically defunct. But yeah, the usual stuff. You know, a lot of shootings, a lot of stabbings, people doing generally dumb stuff, very often motivated by alcohol. Or at least helped by it, lots of people stumbling into the road in front of cars.
Oh, Jesus.
And lots of people driving their cars badly, and of course nobody ever takes responsibility for either. So the usual fun and games, really, from the emergency side of things.
So people are still knifing each other out there?
Oh, like plenty, stabbings. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, and for little reason, really. And sometimes they know each other as well. I mean, it's not uncommon to ask a guy who stabbed him and for him to tell you his friend. That's quite common.
Dr. Wirt, I need to know, is this stabbing like, you know, in the 80s, there was a very popular knife, like with triggered with a press button. Like,
yeah, the blade came out of the handle. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Is it still like an okapi, or is it like a bread knife, or is it like, you know, is it like a knife of convenience? Is it like a steak knife, or are people actually carrying like those flicking type? Is that the knife people are still using?
That is still used. That is occasionally we'll get someone with that knife still stuck in them. Those types of knives. There's a good mix, actually. You know, the sort of bread knife, not really usually a bread knife, but the kitchen knife is usually a jilted lover. Sometimes it's someone who was doing something they shouldn't have been. There's a fair spread, and then improvised devices, you know, broken bottles and things like that are also quite common.
Screwdrivers.
Screwdrivers, absolutely. Anything sharp, you know, anything sharp can be used to kill the people around.
So, Doc, what's the most popular place for stabbings to occur in the body? Where are most of these located?
Usually the chest or the abdomen.
The soft squishy part of like the belly.
Yeah, I mean, yes. You can generally tell if someone was knew what they were doing, or if it was they were just taking a stab at someone.
quite literally.
quite literally. You know, thankfully, I suppose, for the victims, most people don't seem to know where to stab. Being stabbed in the abdomen anywhere can be quite catastrophic, and especially if you actually don't die, because it causes so much damage that you can end up spending months in hospital with all kinds of injuries to your bowels, and end up having multiple surgeries and lying in hospital with open abdomens. So it's quite unpleasant.
That's horrible. Really?
And Dr. Witt, is there any evidence to suggest that the better looking the partner, the harder the person stabs?
Nonsense.
No evidence, but it seems you would be safe, man.
Okay, this is the one thing I've always wanted to know about stabbings, because in my mind, you have to be quite forceful. You know, you have to like stab hard to get through.
Yeah,
the meat.
To get through the skin and the meat, right?
Yeah.
Is that the case?
I suppose you do, but you know, not that hard if you're angry, I guess, and a lot of this stuff, in truth, is related to our high levels of violence and crime, quite often. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a lot of people who end up getting into these situations are like mugged for their cell phones and things, mm-hmm. you know. Didn't really do anything, just walking along the road and someone wanted their phone. And sometimes they happily gave it to them and then they stabbed them anyway. So,
and what is the most bizarre?
It's usually criminal, but quite often people know each other, especially on sort of the public holidays. That seems to be often the case.
So what's the most bizarre incident you've ever seen?
That you've actually dealt with yourself.
It doesn't have to have been from this weekend.
Gareth, I mentioned the crossbow on the show last time.
That's right. I remember that. But have you ever had to remove a foreign object from inside of someone? Yeah.
Oh yeah, no. Every doctor's done that. Removed or had patients present. Sometimes you can't remove them because they've gone so far up. That's whichever orifice they've decided to put them in, and that they've actually got to then be retrieved by, you know, whichever specialist goes in there. So if it's gone up the rectum into the colon, you know, that's got to go to surgery. A surgeon's got to take that out. I saw, actually, it wasn't an incident I dealt with, but I saw a sort of teenage boy who'd stuck a whole bunch of magnetic balls into his urethra. That then ended up in his bladder. So that was quite an interesting one. Needed to be retrieved by a urologist.
That is nasty.
He didn't tell anyone until his penis started bleeding.
Oh.
No.
People do some weird stuff. Retrieving things. Pretty much any sort of kitchen utensil type stuff. Fruits and vegetables and weird things like that. That's pretty commonplace.
All right, thank you. This has been fantastic as always. And if we don't see you, before Christmas and New Year, have a good one. We'll catch up in the New Year and get you back on the show.
No, wait, before we let you go,
Pumi can't get enough.
Just one last thing to ask. So, in the event that one is stabbed, on your way to the hospital, what's the most important thing to do first?
This is actually a good question, because I said to Sia that I could come on the show and talk all about people who have had horrible things happen to them. But ultimately, I should probably do some holiday safety. So
Thank you, Jonathan.
Stabbed, you firstly, don't remove the object that you've been stabbed with. It's still there. So the knife, the piece of glass, the crossbow, whatever it happens to be, don't pull it out. If there's bleeding, you obviously apply pressure to the wound and make sure that you try and stop the bleeding to the best of your ability. And then, you're going to need to go to hospital and get it sorted out. That's pretty much the kind of first aid and quick approach to getting stabbed, I guess.
Sure. All right. Thanks for that responsible ending to an otherwise quite entertaining discussion. Love it.
Cheers.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye. Dr. Jonathan Witt. All right, when we come back, we got the burning platform with the chief upsetter of Twitter for today and yesterday, Canthan Pillay, among others. It's also the reunion of Canthan and Pumi, which hasn't happened for some months now, and people have been asking. They've been gagging for it. They've been going to the emergency room with strange things in different orifices because they've been waiting for this for so long. So today's your lucky day. It's all coming up next.
CliffCentral.com